WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. My guest, Amy Tan, is the author of the best-selling novel, The Joy Luck Club, which was adapted into the film of the same name. The book contrasted the lives of immigrant Chinese women and their American-born daughters. Tan is the American-born daughter of Chinese immigrants. Her new novel, The Hundred Secret Senses, continues to explore the differences between Chinese and American culture. The main character, Olivia, is the daughter of an American mother and Chinese father. When Olivia is a girl, her older half-sister from China, Quan, comes to live with her. Quan claims to have what she calls yin eyes, the ability to see the ghosts of the dead. She talks to them, too. Olivia is supposed to keep this a secret, but instead she tells her American mother. Her mother sends Quan to a mental hospital where she's given electroshock therapy. This reading is from the point of view of Olivia, the American-born daughter.
For most of my childhood, I had a struggle not to see the world the way Quan described it, like her talk about ghosts. After she had the shock treatments, I told her she had to pretend she didn't see ghosts, otherwise the doctors wouldn't let her out of the hospital. "Ah, keep secret," she said, nodding. "Just you me know." When she came home, I then had to pretend the ghosts were there as part of our secret of pretending they weren't. I tried so hard to hold these two contradictory views that soon I started to see what I wasn't supposed to. How could I not? Most kids, without sisters like Quan, imagine that ghosts are lurking beneath their beds, ready to grab their feet. Quan's ghosts, on the other hand, sat on the bed, propped against her headboard. I saw them. I'm not talking about filmy white sheets that howled, ooh. Her ghosts weren't invisible like the affable TV apparitions in Topper who moved pens and cups through the air. Her ghosts looked alive. They chatted about the good old days. They worried and complained. I even saw one scratching our dog's neck, and Captain thumped his leg and wagged his tail. Apart from Quan, I never told anyone what I saw. I thought I'd be sent to the hospital for shock treatments. What I saw seemed so real, not at all like dreaming. It was as though someone else's feelings had escaped, and my eyes had become the movie projector, beaming them into life.
Did ghosts figure into your childhood when you were growing up?
They did. My mother has always believed that I had the ability to see ghosts. There was a time, in fact, when I was 3, and I came down the stairs and I told my mother I couldn't go to the bathroom. And I think most mothers would say, oh, let me take you up there, turn on the lights, see there's no ghosts. But my mother asked me where they were. And she said later on that because she had never taught me this word ghost, that it was true that I had seen a ghost. To this day, she thinks that many of my stories come to me through my grandmother, and that, in effect, what I do is use my keyboard on the computer, sort of like a high-tech Ouija board.
To channel the ghosts.
Yes, right, to channel these stories. I didn't know that she had a belief in ghosts until after my father and brother became ill with brain tumors. My father was a Baptist minister, and any talk about ghosts were confined to the Holy Ghost. And when they became ill, my mother suddenly unleashed all these phantoms from her past, prayers to ancestors, believing that a door slam was signaling the arrival of my grandmother, her mother, who died when she was a young girl. She also tried to get me to do the Ouija board and contact my father and brother because she thought she didn't have this skill, but I did. And it made me think that she had gone crazy, especially after they died. She would ask very poignant things. How are you? Do you get enough to eat? I miss you. But then she was also very practical, and she'd ask things like, what stock should I invest in? Should I sell the house for a certain price? And Well, I can assure you, you know, that if there are such things as ghosts, my feeling is that they're just as disinterested in those matters of financial investing as I am. I used to scoot the little Ouija pointer to goodbye whenever I had to get to those, you know, find those answers.
Well, how did you feel as this child using the Ouija board to contact the spirits of your brother and father? Because your mother believed in it. Did you believe in it?
I didn't believe in it, but I had a fear that possibly it was true. I had these two contradictory views in my mind, and it was hard to reconcile because I often had experiences that I couldn't explain. To this day, I do. Like the character Olivia, who narrates the story in The Hundred Secret Senses, I was a skeptic, in part because, you know, I thought an educated person shouldn't believe in such things, but also I had suffered a lot of disappointments and loss in life, the deaths of my father and brother and friends. And I came to believe that if you doubted such things, then you wouldn't be disappointed if you found out later it wasn't true. But to this day, when things happen, I try to find explanations for them.
What kind of things happen?
Well, on the physical realm, the things that you can sense with your ordinary five senses, you know, door slams, footsteps running up and down, crashing sounds, what sounds like somebody conducting Lambada lessons upstairs, whistling the tune to Jeopardy.
Wait a minute.
I know, ghosts with a sense of humor. The TV turning on by itself and adjusting channels and volume. The telephone disconnecting only when I talk to my mother. The paint colors changing, but only when interior decorators come in. What I've also found, quite to my amusement, the tape recorder stopping about half the time when reporters come to interview me. It happened yesterday, actually, with the AP reporter.
Jeez,
I know things. I know names of people I could not possibly know. I had a friend, for example, who was murdered, and I knew the names of the killers before they were ever arrested. And it was a random robbery. Nobody that either I knew or my friend who was murdered knew. And sure enough, 4 days later, two men were arrested and their names were the ones that I had in my head. I have prophetic dreams. I have coincidences that are too many and too bizarre to simply chalk up to randomness or good luck. And I certainly think that many of the things that have happened to me as a writer, you can call either extraordinarily unusual amounts of good luck, or I have had a lot of help in guiding me to the right people.
Now, have you ever questioned your sanity?
Yes, I have. You know, I've thought that perhaps I am psychotic, and you know, oftentimes on those tests that they give on the personality tests and things, writers do come off as you know, borderline psychotic. You know, whatever it is, it's enabled me to be a writer and to have a wonderful, amazing life.
You know what I'm thinking? Like when your mother thought about spirits or ghosts, there was a whole system for her to fit that into, the system of traditional Chinese culture.
Yes.
But you're only semi-attached to that in a way, being American-born. You know, it's not as kind of a part of you as it is. It's not as much a part of you as it is of your mother. So I'm wondering, do you feel like you have these visions and so on, but you don't have a system to fit them into?
I don't, and I don't want a system. And in part, it was my religious upbringing that made me very skeptical of being handed any system. I'd rather find my own. I'd rather ask the questions and find the answers and come up with what makes sense to me based on what's important to me in life. And I realized in the writing of the book that that's exactly what it is. We choose to believe things based on what we hope, what's important to us in life now.
My guest is Amy Tan. She's the author of The Joy Luck Club, The Kitchen God's Wife, and a new novel called The 100 Secret Senses. This is Fresh Air. Back with Amy Tan. She's written a new novel called The 100 Secret Senses. I know before you started writing fiction, you were doing corporate writing. I guess newsletters, what, speeches for executives, that kind of stuff?
Speeches, brochures, pep talks to employees to work harder for the same amount of money. Fiction, you know, fiction. Yes.
And I've read that you actually went for counseling at one point because you were working so hard, friends were telling you were a workaholic and you needed help.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, I was working 90 billable hours a week.
Was that for money, or were there things that you were trying to keep at bay by thinking about your work all the time instead of the other things that you could be thinking about?
I think it was more about how we determine happiness. I bought into the notion that happiness came through success, and success was measured by money. And I never felt satisfied. So I thought, well, maybe I'm not working hard enough. Maybe I need to earn more money. And I kept doing more and more and more. And the more I worked, the less happy I, you know, was. And I finally realized that I had to just redefine what I meant by happiness and success and all of that. So I went to a psychiatrist. Unfortunately, the psychiatrist was not very attentive. He fell asleep during three sessions, and I decided I'd either get a severe case of low self-esteem or I should do my own kind of therapy. And that's when I decided that I would take jazz piano, improvisational jazz piano, and start reading fiction again and writing fiction, but do these things only for myself. I had no intention of playing jazz piano in front of people, nor did I want to necessarily show my work or have my work published.
When you write now, do you pace yourself well, or is there still an element of working too hard like you did when you were doing the business writing?
I pace myself in part because I know I can't force some things out. Sometimes I need to go and be part of life because that's where my material comes from. I do go through spurts where I'll work all day long, 10 hours, 12 hours, nonstop, and that's when the writing is the best because I'm fully focused, I'm concentrating, I'm in that world. During the last part of writing this new book, I worked around the clock. I worked for 24 hours once, nonstop. And I was amazed to look behind me. I had enclosed myself in a closet, literally a closet. And when I opened the doors to the closet, I was amazed to find the sun had come up after what I thought was only 20 minutes of, you know, after I'd gone in there at 6 p.m. And what I thought was 20 minutes.
Well, I know when you were younger, I guess it's when you were in your late teens or early 20s, you changed the course, the direction of your life. Your mother, I think, thought you should be a doctor, and you were pre-med in school. You left where you were living to live with your boyfriend. You changed your major from pre-med to English, and I believe you and your mother didn't speak for several months after that.
Yeah.
At that point in your life, did you have a choice to make about whether you were going to figure out who you were supposed to be becoming or whether you were going to follow the direction that your mother thought you should and become the person that she wanted you to be? Was that a big crisis for you, deciding which direction to go in?
At the time, I didn't think that I needed to decide who I was going to be. It was a very temporal thing. It had mostly to do with what I wanted now, at that moment, without any regard to future. I did not really think about my meaning in life, was important for the duration of my life until my 20s, when I was in a doctoral program in linguistics at Berkeley. I suppose I didn't think about this because I always felt that I might die soon anyway, since all this stuff had happened in our family. But when I was in my 20s, this very close friend of ours was murdered, and he had, was somebody who was very directed, knew he wanted to develop equipment for disabled people. And I thought, here I am wanting to be Ms. Academic, you know, and write theories that nobody's going to read simply to satisfy my own ego. And what am I doing in this world, and why isn't he in this world? So I quit my program, and I went to work with disabled children for the next 5 years.
Hmm. When your father and brother died, did you and your mother find really different explanations for it?
Yes. My mother believed that my father and brother died for a reason that could be found, for many reasons that could be found. She thought that there was something in the house that caused us to have bad harmony. My mother also felt that there might have been something environmental that caused my brother and father to have the same kind of cancer. Mm-hmm. I've become involved since then as an adult with the Brain Tumor Research Foundation, and so far there's nothing that they can find that is either environmentally or genetically linked. And yet, adding to all of this, my mother has a benign brain tumor. So that's three people in our family who have brain tumors. She's fine. I mean, she's healthy, and she's alive and well, thankfully. My mother had other reasons having to do with karmic debt, that perhaps someone in our family did something in a past life, and now we were suffering from this. I, on the other hand, attributed all of this to a fluke. I didn't want to believe in anything, because any of these explanations that my mother was looking for carried bad, potentially bad consequences for me. If it was environmental or genetic, then maybe I would get a brain tumor. If it was karmic debt, then I was destined, you know, to have something terrible happen to me. If the house was in bad alignment, you know, maybe we would, all of us would always be in bad alignment. I only saw the negative, the fear of reasons I preferred to ignore at that age, any possible explanation.
What about now? What do you turn to explain now three brain tumors in your family? Are you looking to science or to the spirit world? Or,
well, I don't think that these, I am looking to science, as I mentioned, because I have been part of brain tumor research. But I don't know if I'm going to find it or whether it's necessary to find it. I leave that as an open area to question. I also know that what I believe in is the power of love and the necessity of grief for learning what's important in my life.
Mm-hmm.
The other night, I woke up, I had a dream about my father, and I was in public, and suddenly in this dream, I could not stop crying. And I put my hands to my face, and all these tears were pouring out. So many tears that a pool of water was in my hands. And I couldn't stop. You know, I was embarrassed at first because I was in public, and I couldn't stop this. But then I realized, no, this is good. I'm so glad that even after all these years, I can still grieve this much for my father.
Yeah, still feel that much.
Yeah, yeah.
I have one last question for you. You know, since you seem to have all this connection to a spirit world, do you worry that it's going to turn against you sometime, that the spirits can become malevolent and hurt you? You know, so far what you've described is kind of like mischievous, and it helps you find information, helps you write your books.
No, I've never had an experience that seems at all like that. The, you know, like the tape recorder going off the other day, talking to the interviewer, I said, can't you hear them laughing? They, it's a way of saying hello. All the things that I've had happen to me, whether these are true or whether it's my system of belief that I have, it's there always for the good, always for knowledge, for the purpose of understanding my connection to the world. So I'm not afraid at all. I'm delighted when things happen. And then sometimes annoyed when I'm in the middle of writing and I hear the door slam and footsteps run up and then crashing going on upstairs, and I think my husband has come home, and I break from my work and go upstairs and nobody's there. You know, then I say, come on, guys, you know, I really have to get back to work. I take it as hello, as a very warm greeting.
Amy Tan, thank you so much for talking with us.
Thank you.
Amy Tan's new novel is called The 100 Secret Senses. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.